completed tape three, we were proceeding with the midshipman squadron, three battleships, through the Azore Islands. We did not put ashore there, but merely passed between two of the largest islands. Mm-hmm. Well, then we were on a direct course for Norfolk, which was going to be the end of the cruise for us. After about 2.5 days of beautiful steaming, summer, beautiful summer weather, we arrived off Chesapeake Bay, proceeded on in and docked in Norfolk Navy Yard. Well, we were not completely finished yet because we had some cleanup work to do on the battleship. They put her in dry dock, and we were the lucky ones who got to scrape down the bottom and apply coats of anti-corrosive and anti-fouling paint on the bottom. When that was completed, and after having a few days liberty in Norfolk, we proceeded by train back to Annapolis, and then we were ready for our first great September leave. And this we were looking forward to because even though we had had leave at Christmas time before, that was in the middle of winter and we had to wear our blue uniforms, which were not too exciting. This time, since it was summer, we got to wear our sparkling white dress uniforms home. And those were the uniforms that always made quite an impression on the folks back home. Needless to say, that was a very nice homecoming, and we lived it up. Each of us who went to their own homes, even the ones who were from the West Coast, did go home for September leave. They wouldn't miss that for anything. Well, coming back in September, with the beginning of youngster year, it was a different ball game because now we were no longer plebes. We didn't have to march in the middle of the corridors when we were going to and from our rooms. We didn't have to square the corners. We could just walk lazily through at our leisure, and it was a great feeling. Youngster year was, with its new freedoms, was something to look forward to. But I had something ahead that was going to be very discouraging to me. I settled down to the regular academic year. I had my music playing with the NA-10, played a little tennis when I had a chance, but mostly it was just marching to classes, coming back, studying, going out for a sail on the weekends occasionally. And now we were allowed to go ashore on Saturdays and stay a little bit longer. As plebes, we were not allowed to go ashore until afternoon and had to be back by 5 o'clock. As youngsters, we were able to stay out until 7 o'clock. Big deal. There wasn't that much to do out in town anyway. At any rate, the year proceeded on. It was an exciting time of year because it was the football season. Our team was doing well. We got to go on a few outside trips. One was up to Boston when we played Harvard. Another one to Baltimore when we played, I think, Notre Dame again. But mostly it was just routine stuff. But my first problem came in latter part of the year. Weather in Annapolis was very changeable. We didn't have snow. It was very humid, and when it was cold and damp, it was really miserable. Well, I unluckily caught the flu, and that knocked me down. I was out of commission for at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, and I was slow getting back on my feet and getting back into the routine. I wasn't doing as well academically as I had before. So I decided to stay on in Christmas leave and study to try to make up for what I'd lost there while I was out of commission with the flu. Well, January came and we were getting ready then for mid-year exams. Well, the flu bug either had left me or I got another one because I came down with the flu again and that really knocked me for a loop. I just was dragging around, not only physically but mentally. And apparently it had something to do with my ability to hit the exams, because when exam time came in early February, I did very poorly, especially on the math. My exam paper was something like 1.4, which was unheard of. It's way under 50%. I just sat there during the exam, and my mind was almost a total blank. So that pulled my grade average, way down under passing. And one other course that I hadn't been doing too well in either put me on the academic hold list. That meant that I had to go before a review board. And I went to a good friend of mine who was a first classman and asked him what I should do, and he said, your best bet when you go before the academic review board, and this consisted of the superintendent, who was an admiral, and the heads of all the departments, said, don't try to make a big case for yourself. Just go in, let them review your record. Your record isn't that bad. You've got one really good thing going for you, and that was you did very well on youngster crews. It had been, I had failed to mention that I had a standing of number 24 out of 1,000 on the crews out of my class, which was pretty good, but that was mostly practical application. There was some academics involved with that on the crews, but not too much. So I followed his advice, and the day of the that I was to appear before the board came, I went before them. It was late in the afternoon. I knew that I was in trouble when I walked in the room because it was after 5 o'clock, and you could feel the attitude of the men in there was, let's get this over with, it's late, we've got to get home. Well, there was only one man that stood up for me, and that turned out to go against me. That was my language. I had been studying Italian, and I'd been doing very well in that. And one of the other academic department heads spoke up and said, why, if you were doing so well in Italian, why didn't you take something easier that you'd had before? You could have spent more time on your math. Well, I didn't have an answer to that. So that was a negative against me. Well, I didn't feel too concerned, but they told me that I was excused and I left the room. About an hour later, a messenger came to my room. He said, I have a message from the academic board, and they have said that you are to resign. Your commission is a midshipman. Well, I was floored. I couldn't believe it. I felt not too bad about what I had done academically. I'd had a good year the first year, and not too bad a year with the exception of the exam and the few weeks leading up to exam time. However, that was the end of it. I was out. There was no comeback on it. So that was probably one of the lowest points in my lifetime. I felt that I had not only failed myself, but my family and everybody associated with me. I contacted my family, and they felt very badly about it. And they were just about to head for Florida, their annual trip down there, and they said, we'll stop by and gather up all your gear, your personal effects, and you go on to Florida with us and have a little vacation. So I said, okay, that's all right with me. So they came by, we loaded up, and on we went. They had the trailer. We had an old Purcell trailer at that time, and the three of us lived in that Purcell trailer in a trailer park in West Palm Beach. Well, the good thing about this situation was now I'd get to see Emily again. We'd been corresponding back and forth, but had very little chance to see each other since 1935 when we met. So we dated quite regularly, and that helped to calm my nerves down and to make me feel a little more optimistic about life in general. At the end of our stay down there, we headed back for Salamanca, and I then had the problem of deciding what I would be doing the following year. Would I go back to college? Would I get a job? What would I do? In the meantime, Dave Roger, who I had met as a plebe, and he had left for academic reasons at the end of his first year, got in touch with me. He lived in Rochester, and when he went back home to Rochester, he got a job with Eastman Kodak and was doing very well. Turns out that who you know in Eastman Kodak makes a big difference, and his brother was fairly well up in the hierarchy, and through him he got in with Eastman and was in the Finnish film department. But he was determined that he was going to get me into Eastman Kodak, so I said, well, what have I got to lose? And I went out and visited him. He had arranged for a meeting, an interview, with Mr. Farley, who was one of the top men in Eastman Kodak. He was the head of the Finnish film department, which was the largest department out there. Well, I went in, and he was very busy, but he took time out to meet me, and he said, after Dave had already informed him what my background was and that I'd had some time at the Naval Academy, he said, I don't have any openings in my department, but I want you to meet another department head and talk with him. So he sent me on down, and I interviewed with the head of the packaging department. This is the department that packages all the products for Eastman Kodak. Well, he took to me right away. He seemed to like me, and it seems that he was looking for somebody, a young person, that he could train, who would eventually come on up and, if all went well, would take over his department. Of course, that would be many years in the future. Anyway, he could not offer me a job that day, but said, we'll get in touch with you within a month, and we'll let you know if there is an opening or not, so you'll know how to make your plans for the future. Well, I went home, and I didn't hear anything for several weeks, and I figured, well, that's that, we'll just forget that. In the meantime, my family said they thought I ought to go back to school. Well, where to go? I had inquired around about engineering schools. I felt I wanted to pick up on engineering. And it was advised that I go to the University of Michigan, which had one of the top engineering schools at that time. Still does, in fact. So I contacted them, their registrar, and they advised me to come on out and pre-register. Well, it was getting close to the time that I needed to go out there and do that, and all of a sudden one day I got a call from Dave Roger, and he says, come on up. They've got a job for you up here. I said, you don't mean it. He says, yes, the man that interviewed you has talked him into hiring you to be his understudy in his department. Well, what to do? I went to my family. I said, here's a chance for me. It's a very good opening and very good future. What should I do? Well, we had a big family powwow, and they said, no, we think that you ought to go back and finish your college. So I reluctantly had to call Dave and tell him that I had made other arrangements in the meantime. Needless to say, he was very disappointed because he had counted on my coming up and we would be best buddies and all that. So anyway, summertime and came and went. I worked at the store that summer, and when September came, I went on out and entered University of Michigan. University of Michigan is a fine university, very prestigious, but it was just too large for me. I was used to smaller schools. Even the Naval Academy with 3,500 was much smaller. Michigan at that time had about 10,000 students, and I just felt completely lost there. I had been contacted before I went out there by some fellows who lived in Ellicottville, nearby Salamanca. They were the Lawler brothers. There were three of them, and they all were going to the University of Michigan that next year. And they asked me if I didn't want to join them as roommates. They were planning to rent an apartment in off campus, and they felt that they could save some money doing that. So I said, yes, that sounds good to me, and be somebody near home. Their uncle was a doctor in Salamanca, who I knew quite well. So I moved in with them. Well, they all had jobs in a restaurant just off the campus. And they said, why don't you come on over? We think we can get you in as a dishwasher. I said, well, it sounds good to me. I need all the help I can get financially. It's still Depression time. This is 1938 now, September 1938, and the Depression is beginning to ease up, but it's kind of rough going as far as making your way, paying your way in college. So I went in, and Mrs. Bennett, who managed the restaurant and did the cooking, hired me as a dishwasher. Well, I knew how to wash dishes, so I got right in, started that, and turned out that all eight of us, there were four other fellows, two from our area and two from around Michigan, were roommates in this double apartment we had. We all worked in the restaurant, some as waiters and some as dishwashers. So I'd washed dishes for about a week, and an opening came for a waiter up front. And Mrs. Bennett said, how would you like to be a waiter? I said, sounds fine to me. I think I can do it. So I got promoted, I guess we'd call it. And we had a very good routine there. They didn't serve breakfast, served lunches and dinners, and we got our meals for our services. We didn't get paid anything. We did get some tips, not huge ones, but enough for a little extra spending money. So that seemed to get me set for the year, for my at least take care of my food. Usually we skipped breakfast. That wasn't too good an idea, but nobody wanted to get up for breakfast anyway. They just got up and went to classes. I thought I wanted to get involved with the University of Michigan band. So I went around to the band room one day and met the band director, who I had known slightly when I was at Ohio Northern. That was William D. Ravelli. He was now director of bands at the University of Michigan. And he insisted on interviewing or auditioning every player. So I had brought my instrument along, and he asked me to get it out and play something for him. He gave me a piece of music, and I got through that. I was a little nervous because he was rather a formidable type person, not a real encouraging type at all. Just said, play that. But I played it, I got through. They wanted to know what kind of a mouthpiece I had, and I said, it's a Chester Hazlitt. And they said, who's Chester Hazlitt? And I said, well, he's a big time dance band player. Dance band player. I knew I shouldn't have said that, but it didn't seem to make any difference. He did then decide to take me on. He said, here you are in here 3 weeks after school has started. And he said, you can't play in the marching band. Well, I had counted on that. I thought I'd be able to move right in and play with the marching band, which had over 100 pieces. He said, they'd been here 3 weeks before school started, practicing, drilling, and so on. He said, you can play in the concert band for the winter season. Well, okay, if I can't play in that, I'll take the concert band. So he said, our rehearsal times are going to be in the noon hour. That's when we rehearse. And I said, oh, I've got a problem. I have a job waiting on tables. Well, make up your mind. Are you going to wait on tables or are you going to play? Well, I thought it over and I said, I guess I'd better stick with my waiting on tables because that means money to me. So reluctantly, I had to bypass the band. My year at Michigan was not what I would call a real happy one. The courses were fairly interesting. There were engineering courses that I'd never had before. I decided to go for industrial engineering, which would have to do with management. It's a broad term type of engineering, not as specific as mechanical engineering or electrical or chemical engineering. So I lined up courses that would be suitable for that. The problem of earning some extra money through playing dance work came up. It turned out that two of the Lawler boys were musicians and pretty good ones at that. One played trombone, one played sax. So we got together and organized a little dance band of about eight pieces and started looking around for jobs, and we didn't have any trouble at all. We were hired for fraternity dances mostly. And we were busy just about every weekend, at least one night a weekend, usually on Saturday, occasionally on Friday night. So that brought in some extra income. That year ended with I'm still not caught up to where I'd like to be because of moving around so much in different colleges. So I decided to stay on at summer school to try to make up some extra credits, and hopefully then by fall I would be ready to be a full-fledged senior. Well, by the time summer school was out, I was fed up with school. My grades were not that great, but I was hanging on, even though in a tough school. So money was a problem as well, and it seemed the best thing to do would be to lay out for a year, work at the hardware store, and then come back the following year and try to finish up. So I stayed home that fall, worked in the hardware store, and my father and mother were building a house in Lake Worth, which was nearing completion. And they gave me a little break and let me go down in the fall when it was time for my mother to go down to help wind up the house. And I got to do all the painting on the house. Then again, I had a great good fortune to spend more time with Emily. That was really, I guess, what was behind my desire to go down. So I went back. In January, after the house was finished, my dad came down after he'd taken inventory, and I could tell he was not feeling too well. He was really excited about getting back to Florida, but he didn't look too well. Well, I left them, went back, and went to work in the store to help Lester out. I spent most of the winter with music, playing the Erie Band, and also I signed up with a little theater group in Salamanca, and that was kind of fun. I had some background in that, and I had some parts in a couple of plays and so forth. But generally, it was a pretty boring year, pretty boring winter. Well, it came time for my parents to come back, and I could see my father had gone downhill, but he was not well, it turned out. And he couldn't go to work. He was feeling very poorly. The doctor came to see him, and it was our old family doctor, Dr. Bourne, who had a lot to learn about medicine, even though he'd been practicing for 50 years or more. Well, to make a long story short, my father went downhill rapidly, and Dr. Bourne was treating him for he didn't know what. He was just giving him sugar pills, I guess. Well, finally, he thought, maybe I better bring another doctor in. He brought Dr. Preston in, who was a surgeon. Dr. Preston diagnosed my father was having a gallbladder problem. You've got to have that. You've got gallstones, and you've got to get those out right away. So this was near the end of May, 1940. And they took him in, operated on him, but he didn't recover from the operation. He was in very poor shape, and he just didn't survive the post-operative period, and he died on June 2nd. This was a very traumatic thing for all of us. We felt so bad for him because he had suffered so in the last few months as well. But we had to move on. That even made my position in the hardware store even more important because Lester needed me even more now with my dad gone. Well, I had kept in touch with Emily and asked her if she would like to come up and pay us a visit. And she'd never been north, so or at least in New York State. I think she had been to Wisconsin once or twice as a little girl. So she agreed to come up. So she came up right at the end of June, 1940. And this helped to pep both my mother and I up after my father's death. It was really good of Emily to come in under that situation, but she really helped us a lot. Well, now, my class at the Naval Academy had just graduated in early June of 1940. Well, I hadn't given up entirely on the Navy when I left. I found out that I could get a commission as a probationary ensign in the Naval Reserve, but not until my class had graduated. So I had to wait until June of 1940. Well, I took a day off, and Emily went with me up to Buffalo to the Naval Reserve Center. And I went in there with the idea of signing up and trying to get a probationary commission, which, if I stuck with it, would lead to a full commission in the Naval Reserve, in the active reserve. That meant I would take training monthly and go on cruises once a year. They were interested in me, but they said, we've got something that we think would be of more interest to you. They just instituted a new program called the B-7 program, and they laid the whole thing out there. Well, what it amounted to was you signed up with the idea of going in as an apprentice seaman, Naval Reserve. You'd go on a 30-day cruise, kind of a orientation cruise, and then you would go to college, a college. There were two of them that had a V7 course, and would go for 90 days, and it would be all academics with basics in naval technical courses in naval history and so on, and you would come out then with a commission, an active commission in the Naval Reserve, and you would go in on active duty from there. Well, that sounded just right for me. I thought that was the next best thing to having stayed on at the Naval Academy and graduated. Well, after Emily had left, it was about time to start this cruise, which I went to New York the 1st of September and reported aboard the battleship New York. Well, I had already cruised on the battleship New York, so I was quite familiar with it. We went down to Canal Zone and went ashore there in Balboa, had a little liberty. Came back up the coastline, returned up to Norfolk, where again I was familiar with Norfolk, having come in there from my midshipman youngster cruise. Though outside of the fact that I got seasick again, going around Cape Hatteras, that's some of the roughest weather in the world, it was a very pleasant and interesting experience. Then I had a waiting period from the end of September to the middle of December. Then I reported out to Chicago, to Northwestern University, the downtown campus on Chicago Avenue. And I started my 90-day